Okay, so what I'm going to say, and you don't need to react to this.
It's too late. I've already reacted. I'm preemptively reacting because I know, since it's coming from you, it's going to be banana soup.
Welcome to Feminist Frequency Radio. This is episode 56, and I'm your host, Anita Sarkeesian. I'm joined by my fellow Time Lord, Ebony Adams.
Hello, citizens of Gallifrey.
This is the show that asks you to be critical of the media you love, or alternatively, we're the feminist killjoys coming for your media, depending on your perspective. Today, we're finally talking about the new Doctor Who. Yay!
Yay!
Cheers, yay!
Finally!
We are recording this from the past. Today is November 12th, so we'll only be discussing the show through episode 6. But after we hash out all of our feelings about the new Doctor, her companions, and the quality of her adventures, Ebony and I will finish the show by each sharing a little something in What's Your Freakout? Now on with the show. Hey, Ebony.
Anita, are we doing intro banter? Is this what we are doing right now?
I don't know what we do when Carolyn's not here. I feel like everything falls apart.
It feels a little bit dead.
She's the glue that holds us together.
Well, and also I think she gives us both a little bit of energy. I know you didn't get any sleep, although you typically don't sleep consistently.
That's not true.
Anyway,
I just had a really bad headache yesterday, so I fell asleep. I had to like force myself asleep early and then woke up in the middle of the night and reorganized and labeled my spice cabinet. Hey, podcast.
Hey. That's a shout out to our producer. Yeah. So I'm hoping, and I'm actually quite certain that our discussion of Doctor Who will pep you up. If nothing else, it will make me happy.
It will, especially because of the last couple episodes that I watched. But yeah, we're recording this so far into the future. Carolyn is actually probably landed in Germany at this point, which I'm excited for her.
Humble brag.
Yeah, we'll have to hear all about it.
I wish kind of like podcast super fan who can know every time you or Carol went somewhere and, you know, consequently we're not on the podcast and I yell humble brag, because straight up, there's been a lot of international travel and I ain't gone nowhere.
I know.
I mean, I did the book tour. That was huge.
We gotta get you
but
on that
was that. Domestic, babies. That was the
lower 48. Well, one, I just realized Carolyn will have talked about her trip already on other episodes because this is coming out in like a month.
It's a wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Hello!
It's appropriate. It's appropriate. Yeah. I'm going to be out of town for like 3 weeks, so we're trying to... I don't want to be gone from all of you for that
long. I'm never gone. I'm always here.
But speaking of Carolyn from the future, why doesn't she give us a little entertainment news?
Hey, everyone. It's Carolyn here, crashing Ebony and Anita's little party to bring you this week's entertainment news. All right, first of all, I think we can all agree that by far the most important entertainment story of the past week or so is, of course, that author Andre Osimhen, who wrote the novel Call Me By Your Name, has announced that he is writing a sequel novel to Call Me By Your Name. Tremendously exciting news for all of us, I'm sure. Presumably, for reasons that will be clear to those of us, those of you who have both read the book and seen the film of Call Me By Your Name, this novel sequel will tell a different story set in a different time period than director Luca Guadagnino's planned movie sequel, which will probably be set later in the 1980s. Okay, with that, by far the biggest entertainment news story of the week out of the way, let's move on to some other entertainment news stories. Speaking of queer cinema, if you can call this that, in other news, there's been a lot of talk this past week about the film Girl, which is now playing on Netflix and is also Belgium's submission to the Best Foreign Language Film category for the 2019 Oscars. Girl is a film that focuses on a transgender girl, and it received a rapturous reception at the Cannes Film Festival. However, trans and queer critics are now condemning the film, which I myself have not seen, and based on the criticisms I've read, I'm actually not eager to see. So writing in The Hollywood Reporter, critic Oliver Whitney writes that Girl, quote, isn't just another case of irresponsible casting or harmful stereotypes, like much of Hollywood's long, ugly treatment of the trans community. It's the most dangerous movie about a trans character in years. If Girl takes home an Oscar, it would be a drastic step backwards for trans representation in Hollywood. Whitney also states that, yes, like too many stories about trans people, Girl stars a cis actor, but that this, while being a noteworthy problem, is also, quote, the least of Girl's issues. Now, I don't want to go into further detail here about what the film's issues are, because discussion of them might be triggering to some people, and they make me personally quite uncomfortable. But I will link to Oliver Whitney's Hollywood Reporter piece in the show notes, because the conversation around the film is an important one. Speaking of the Hollywood Reporter, last Wednesday at a THR event, their Women in Entertainment Gala, comedian Hannah Gadsby, whose outstanding Netflix special Nanette we discussed on a previous episode of FFR, made an impassioned speech about the ways in which quote-unquote good men talk about quote-unquote bad men, and how those good men so often fail to call out misogyny by name, rather excusing bad behavior by men as just little misunderstandings of the rules, and why it's such a problem that men, including sort of late-night comedians who she refers to collectively as Jimmies, sort of get to determine where the line is that sort of determines what actually constitutes bad or unacceptable behavior. It's a really great speech, and we will link to that in the show notes as well. Finally, at last week's Game Awards, the Best Esports Player Award went to Sonic Fox, who is one of the best fighting game players in the world at the moment, if not the best. What makes his win, you know, particularly noteworthy, perhaps, is that, you know, in addition to being the best esports player in the world, he's also black and gay and a furry. And in the midst of all the manufactured emotion and corporate hype of the Game Awards, Sonic Fox, kind of stole the show with really genuine expressions of excitement and really by just being himself. He concluded his speech by saying, quote, "I'm gay, black, a furry, pretty much everything a Republican hates, and the best esports player of the whole year, I guess." It was a pretty great moment, not to mention an important one, I think, for LGBTQ people in the gaming community. All right, everyone, and with that, I will send it back to Ebony and Anita for their conversation about all that wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. Bye for now.
Okay, moving on to the main discussion. I'm so excited that we're finally talking about the new Doctor Who. This is, what, the 13th season? No, wow. My notes failed me.
Okay, so
11. It's the 11th season and the 13th Doctor.
Correct. Oh my God, we were about to get so many keyboard warriors.
So many. So if you aren't familiar, Doctor Who is a long-running British sci-fi show in which the Doctor, a universe-hopping alien called a Time Lord, can effectively die and be reborn into a completely new body. 12 times, apparently, with all new personalities. And so Doctor Who is a show that has been on, Ebony, how, like, it, so people refer
just
to
over
it
50
as,
years.
Yeah, like, it's, there's old Who, and then it was rebooted, I think, in, like,
2005, I want to say.
Cool. I don't know anything. I don't know why I get to be host.
But listen, I'm just going to offer corrections. My corrections themselves might be incorrect, but I'm going to say them with confidence.
Well, here's the thing, is Ebony is a huge Doctor Who fan, and while, so, you know, I'm really
excited. And that's old Who and new Who.
Yeah, exactly.
Anita, you only have watched new Who.
I only watched the new Who, and I actually gave up. Emotions.
I want to talk a little bit about why you gave up, so make sure that we circle back.
Let's just do it now. Let's just do okay. it now. So one, I'm excited to have this conversation with you specifically because you do have like old Doctor Who love, and like mm-hmm. I haven't been able, just like the original Star Trek, man.
Oh boy,
I have a really hard time.
Listen. I have so much to say about how you refuse to watch the Star Treks that I
don't
tell
refuse.
You to. You now straight up refuse.
Now that we live in the same place, we should have like Star Trek nights. Anyways, okay. What happened for me is I came into Doctor Who kind of late. So the 11th Doctor, played by Matt Smith, was my first Doctor. And then I went back and watched all of the new Who and got super invested. And halfway through the 11th Doctor, I just couldn't take it anymore. I felt like the showrunner at the time, who is named Stephen Moffat, was so awful. Like, not only was he awful on social media to people who, you know, fans who were critiquing some of his misogyny and some of the other problems with his writing, just the storylines got really shitty and like the female characters got shitty. And I couldn't take it anymore. And there was a couple of people, like our awesome graphics designer at Feminist Frequency, Ray, and I, who are big, big fans, and just, we like, it was like a breakup for us. Like, we just had to sort of rip the Band-Aid and stop watching. And then when they announced the 12th Doctor was an old white dude, I was like, no, like, I can't. So it's actually really exciting to come back to Doctor Who with a new showrunner, Chris Chibnall, who is the incredible showrunner of Broadchurch, which is a show that I've definitely talked about on the show. And then the new Doctor is a woman, which we have been waiting for forever. So that's kind of my like Doctor Who background.
Yeah, I am going to cavil a bit about your description of Peter Capaldi at 12.
Sure.
Because
I didn't watch any of it, so yeah. I have no judgment on whether he was good or not.
Well, he is amazing. I think the quality of his stories, they certainly got better. And I think his last season with Bill as companion was among some of the best of Doctor Who. But no, I don't think he was as well served by great stories. But I just, his particular model of the Doctor, for me, that's Ebony. Hit me up at Ebony Astor if you want to argue. Is exactly what I'm looking for in the Doctor. If I were going to have quit Doctor Who, it actually would have been, and oh man, I'm about to get some angry letters about this, but it would have been during David Tennant's tenure.
Oh no! Because he's my favorite.
He's a lot of folks' favorite. And here's the thing, I really like David Tennant. I absolutely do. And I think, you know, as horrible and as revolting as he is as Kilgrave on Jessica Jones, he's so effective in that role. But as Doctor Who, like, dude, it was like a ham and cheese sandwich without the cheese and bread. I could not watch him chew that scenery as much.
I feel
as,
like,
and I know that's ridiculous.
No.
Talking about Doctor Who, but I just,
I don't,
it was
think it's
not
ridiculous.
My jam.
So I think what happened for a lot of us, so again, didn't watch Old Who. I actually really like what's his name, who played the 9th Doctor,
Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, like I've seen him in other stuff. He's in Broadchurch. He was in The Leftovers. Like I like him as an actor. I did not like the sort of leather jacket, like big, kind of beefy. Like, you know, he's like a
I
bigger
loved him.
Dude.
Loved him.
I just, it felt super weird. And so I think David Tennant was really refreshing, even though I don't know if his take on Doctor Who felt authentic or
well, everybody has
line.
Their own doctor, right? So I think one of the things that is so great about Doctor Who is that there is an entry point for everyone. And because the mythos of Doctor Who involves this continual regeneration, you never have to feel as if you're too divorced from the spirit of the Doctor. There's always a new one or someone that you can harken back to if the one that's currently in front of you is not your particular favorite. I really liked Christopher Eccleston. Like, before Peter Capaldi, he was my favorite of New Who, simply because he felt there was a quality of alienness to him that felt very, although, you know, there was a kind of like, you know, prosaic element to, you know, his interpretation, you know, in you know, part of that is given to us through his northern accent, right? Which they talk about. But nevertheless, he felt alien to me in a way that David Tennant did not. And one of the things that, I mean, it's not David Tennant's fault at all, but I really, really resisted the Dr. Rose relationship. Mm. Like, I hated it. I hated it so much. And I hated what it turned the show into and how it affected the Doctor's relationship with future companions, such that his whole season with Martha Jones was like a wash because, you know, he's, you know, apparently grieving his time with Rose, and Martha is, you know, in love with the Doctor. And then we get Matt Smith, who's another young Doctor. And I just, I don't want there to be even a hint of a scintilla, of a soupçon, of a dab of like romance in my, yeah, with my, I just don't, you know?
Okay, we're gonna come back to the romance bit because I have a controversial thought about the new.
I can't wait. And I love, I wish we had recorded this in the same studio because although we wouldn't come to blows, I can just see my face reacting to whatever, like,
no, it's good. It's good.
Kookiness
but
you're
so
gonna give me.
Let's talk about the new one. So what, mm-hmm, like, how do you feel about a female doctor, a white female doctor, about Jodie Whittaker? Like,
I really love Jodie Whittaker as an actor. And so far, I've only seen through episode 5, and which is a weird thing to say as a massive Doctor Who super fan. But yo, y'all, when I tell you that, like, Peter Capaldi was my jam, I still have not watched his final episode because it will hurt too much. I have not processed it. I know.
Well,
I know.
But also, episode 6 came out like last night this morning. So you can be forgiven for not having seen it yet.
I was asleep like a rational adult. You know, I wasn't up like you relabeling my spices with a crayon and some scotch tape. But no, so far I am really loving Jodie Whittaker. I do love that the Doctor is a woman. Would I have loved it more if she was a black woman or, you know, an Asian woman? Or yeah, absolutely, you know. But I do love that she's a woman. And I love her take on the Doctor. I love that we're still finding out what sort of a doctor she is. But the core element of who the Doctor is, that steel, that commitment to helping, that implacability when it comes to evil. Like, I love that that's there. She's not someone who's going to be pushed around, but there's this delightful whimsy about her. And I love that she's kind of like a gadgety doctor, you know? Like, she's created her own Sonic. I love that.
Yeah, totally. So I'm grappling a little bit with, like, I don't love her yet, but I don't hate her. And I'm wondering if my instincts on that just come from, like, internalized sexism, right? Like, am I resistant to the fact that she's a woman subconsciously, even though I'm excited about it? I do really like Jodie Whittaker, but there still feels, it feels a little rough to me. And I think some of it is, I don't really like a lot of the material that they're giving her. You know, I think we can get more into the episodes in a minute, but just on a surface level, episode 5, the Tsuranga conundrum, where they're on a, we can talk about it in a minute, but that was the first episode that I felt like was a Doctor Who episode that I was, like, engaged in or engaged with.
Uh-huh.
The other ones just, I kind of, you know, like, there's, mm-hmm, just a little bit, and like, they didn't sit super great with me. And I don't know if it's because I've been away from Doctor Who for too long, if they're, mm-hmm, just not, like, the strongest episodes. Some of the dialogue, I think, is a little weak. And the, mm-hmm, storylines, you know, the narratives are okay. But, you know, I do give it a lot of space for growth because, like you said, like, we have to learn who the Doctor is along with the Doctor. We're learning brand new companions. We're learning all of this new stuff. I'm forgiving enough to give the show some time to find its bearings. And I want to bring up Chris Chibnall, who is, again, the new showrunner that I was pretty excited about. I feel like, you know, when we look at the topics of the episodes that have come up, I feel like he is very much making a statement. Like, this is what... So there is an episode about Rosa Parks, which we absolutely have to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
arachnids in the UK with Mr. Big. What?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Is a Trump-like businessman politician. The Demons of the Punjab, which you haven't watched yet, is about the history of India and Pakistan. So, like, he is making a very concerted effort to say, this is our political position. We are progressive. We care. Like, they're... these are important issues to us in the history and in future. And like, take, like, there's just no pulling punches here. Like, from what I see as his perspective on how he wants to root down what Doctor Who is under his writer's room.
Yeah. And, you know, there's always been an interesting conversation in Doctor Who fandom and a split between people who really love when the Doctor is sort of in outer space dealing with aliens versus when the Doctor is on Earth, either in the far future or in the distant past, whether that's an alternate history or not. People who, you know, either love those episodes or hate them. I think it's very interesting that, and again, I have not seen episode 6, but that we have already had of the 6 episodes, 3, 4 set on Earth, right? So the first one, and then...
The Ghost Monument wasn't. The second one that was right. On that weird, desolate planet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Rosa Parks was on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Arachnids in the UK is on Earth. The other two... Oh, yeah, and Demons of the Punjab.
Yeah, so I think that's very interesting. And one of the things that I want to talk about that I think has to be discussed is that there are places that writers and a showrunner seem to be willing to go and, in fact, are eager to go via the, you know, the vehicle of a white woman that they could not go or are unwilling to go if it were someone else in that role. So the episode of Rosa Parks, for instance, right? There's actually a moment when, you know, the Doctor says, like, it's easier for me right now. Like, there are certain things I can do right now that you, Ryan, and you, Yaz, cannot do by virtue of how you're perceived in this time period. And the same is true if they go back to, you know, ancient Rome or, you know, you know, the Ming Dynasty or something, right? Like, there's always something about, like, that rarely gets addressed when we do these future episodes with the Doctor, in which we are allowed to forget that, hey, this is a white man in this space, whether that feels, you know, organic or not. There's something about the invisibility that whiteness grants itself and maleness grants itself as the default, that the show is occasionally, this new show, is occasionally trying to tackle head on. I don't think so far it's doing it well, but I'm giving it time because I do think it has promise.
Yeah. So, okay. I think first of all, Ryan is a black, a young black man, and Yaz is a Muslim woman. And then the other companion is Graham, who is an older white dude. And so that, like, that is an interesting and exciting
mix. First of all, there's
too
many companions. I'm going to just say this, though. There are too many companions. I love them all so far, but because we need to get to know this new Doctor, I would have appreciated if we had one, at most, two companions. I do think, I mean, we know, like, Graham, love you, but the old dude, he's going to get booted. It's going to be the young folks who get to stay. Sure. But I'm just like, this is too much, you know? Like,
okay, so what I'm going to say, and you don't need to react to this.
It's too late. I've already reacted. I'm preemptively reacting because I know, since it's coming from you, it's going to be banana soup.
This is going to happen in fanfic, whether you like it or not.
Your fanfic?
Yes.
Okay.
But
you should share that Google.
I don't
with
want
me.
Romance in Doctor Who. I agree. Like, I don't, unless it's like a one-off sort of booty call thing. Like, I don't want the core group to start fucking each other. But like, there is a scene in the Saranga Conundrum where Yaz and Ryan are like in the hallway and Ryan is talking about what happened to his mother. And I was like, oh my God, I want them to date.
I should have clarified. That. Okay. I'm excited to see that because those are two very attractive young people. And
yes.
I feel like they could be my niece and nephew. Well, not if they're going to date. Anyway, when I said I don't want romance, I don't want a specific kind of romance. I don't really want to know about, I don't want the Doctor romancing a companion unless it's someone like River Song, who's not a consistent companion, right? but someone who is older. There's something to me that is ineffably gross, yes, about the older male doctor romancing a younger female companion. And yes, I get that David Tennant was not like the actor was not like decades and decades older than Billy Piper, but the doctor is much older than Rose Tyler. And there is something gross to me about that kind of relationship.
I completely agree.
Or even the
agree.
Hint of it. And I reject it. I reject it outright. But when you talk about like the doctor, like we know he's had a granddaughter. We know he's had a family. We know he's had lovers. I love it. You know, the doctor is canonically pansexual. Love it. Like, yeah, Dr. Gissom, you know, you're in like, you're in that TARDIS. You get lonely sometimes. Hook yourself up. But
can
don't fuck with
spend
your
companions. The bonus talking about River Song, one of my favorite characters on the show, and the disservice they did to her.
Oh, yo, absolutely. Let's make it let's make it the bonus for the rest of the year.
Yeah, great. Okay, let's talk about the Rosa Parks episode.
Yep, hated it.
Yeah, why don't you get us started on it?
Okay, well, I hated it, so that's where I'm starting.
Okay, would you like me to say more than that?
maybe. Okay, so let me say this. I have read so many reactions to that episode that were laudatory, people who loved it and people who were very, very moved by the episode. So I was very optimistic about it going in because I've enjoyed this season so far. And in fact, I watched the episodes a little bit out of order. And one thing, maybe if we come back to Doctor Who, we'll talk about how like past seasons have had a kind of through line, like an overarching, you know, mystery. So whether it was like, you know, Bad Wolf or the crack in the universe or whatever, it doesn't seem as if they're going to be doing that this season, which I'm of two minds about. But so I watched the episodes out of order and I watched the Rosa Parks episode last. So I was ready to love it. But at the same time, I was like, why this? And I don't mean, you know, like obviously as a Black American woman of a certain age, 87, I love when people talk about, you know, American civil rights history. But why would Doctor Who choose to do it? Now, obviously, the answer is Rosa Parks is a female, like she's a female rebel, a resistance fighter. She is an icon of what women can do. And I think it's very important for a show like Doctor Who with this new female doctor to, you know, kind of align itself with those kind of icons, right? But as I watched it, I just thought, okay, first of all, on a technical level, I could never get into the episode because the accents were uniformly terrible. And I think it's an interesting choice to have had Black British actors playing the role of Black Americans.
Does the UK have the same sort of laws as Canada where it, on a Canadian film or TV show, you have to have X amount of Canadians working on the project, whether it's in the cast or the crew?
I wouldn't be surprised. But I thought, listen, if y'all can spend the money to get fucking Mr. Big in an episode, you can get a Black American actress to portray Rosa Parks. Not that I don't love that actor. She was great in Sherlock, where she was giving the business to Sherlock. Love that lady. But accents were terrible. But more than that, the ideological underpinnings of that episode were such patronizing BS, you know, and of course culminating in that amazing line where Yaz says, I can be a police officer because of Rosa Parks. I fell off my couch. I have still not recovered. The way in which that episode, and not to take away from the incredible heroism and bravery and courage of Rosa Parks, but I have a real problem with the mythologizing we do about social justice movements and people who become, you know, figureheads in them, such that actions are portrayed as like the result of individual bravery rather than as the result of collective organizing. And so it's a way for us to defer responsibility onto these heroic figures and kind of, you know, let go of our own culpability such that we look for heroes and we look for villains. So this is a story about Rosa Parks, you know, and her amazing heroism, which, yes, absolutely, she is a hero. But then also the villainy of James Blake and his individual virulent racism. And I'm like, no, this is so much bigger than that. And you're doing a disservice to the actual history here. Also, fun fact, Rosa Parks was not the first person to refuse to give up her seat. And in fact, Claudette Colvin, who was a Black teenager 9 months before Rosa Parks was arrested for refusing to give up her seat in Montgomery. This was something that that civil rights groups had long talked about. This is not a spur of the moment decision. And to portray it as this sort of like just individual reckoning with racism, I think, you know, kind of elides a lot of the importance of that history. We'll get into it.
So, okay, I also didn't really care for the episode that much, although I want to just bring up a couple of things that I thought were good about it.
Like, oh, yeah, there was some good stuff.
Yeah, so one, I was sort of bothered at how, like, she refused to get up as, you know, like, the mythology around it, like you mentioned. I do like that they showed that she was organizing, that she was with Martin Luther King, she was a part of the NAACP. I don't know if they said that explicitly in the show or not, but I also didn't like how little that was shown, right? Like, so both of those things I thought were troubling. Some of the stuff that I thought was interesting, though, was... like when Yaz got on the bus as, you know, a non-Black woman, and she was like, where do I sit? Am I, like, does being, like, quote unquote colored, as they called it, count for me? Because I'm brown, but I'm not Black.
Right.
And, you know, like.
Yeah, I think that was really interesting, talking about, like, the actual fiction behind racial divisions, right?
And the fact that they kept calling her Mexican, because that was the only point of reference in terms of, like, not Black brownness. And so, like, some of that stuff I thought was pretty smart, even if, like, as a whole, it was a little eye-rolling. What else did I like about that episode?
I mean, well, I love the fact of the episode, in a way. And let's not forget, as many adults... who love Doctor Who, you know, should never forget that this is still a show that's by and large for young people, for children, right? So some of the didacticism and, you know, exposition heavy in writing, you know, is appropriate for a show that's largely directed at, still largely directed at kids, right? So the kind of things that we may roll our eyes about, or the kind of history that we're like, this is so basic, why are you talking about Rosa Parks or Martin Luther King Jr. or Emmett Till in this way? And yay, shout out that they did actually bring up Emmett Till, right? It's because it's a show for young people. But I did wonder, like, in a British show, why, if they wanted to tackle, like, you know, this kind of history, why not do, like, a Black British icon show?
I mean, you know? I guess maybe they couldn't get buy-in unless it's something, like, universally known. I don't know.
No, I get it, but I just think that would have been so interesting, right?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. It's
So I want to – I know you haven't watched The Demons of the Punjab, but I kind of want to talk about a couple
about
of things,
it, baby.
If you don't
talk
mind.
About
so
it.
I'm gonna talk about it with some spoilers.
Oh, wait. Before we go, can I just also say this? Like, I don't think the writing in this episode was good, but also there were just, like, occasionally, like, things that I wanted to be cleaner. So I hated that – Rosa Parks had to be explained to Ryan at the beginning of the episode.
Oh, yes.
I was like,
he was surprised about racism.
You know, so they were like, you know, how do you not know Rosa Parks? And he's like, didn't she drive a bus or something and whatever? And then he's gradually reminded. And I was like, okay, that's offensive that he's having to be told by these non-Black people who Rosa Parks is, right? And I get that he's young, but that's offensive. But then later in the episode, Graham, his grandfather, talks about how when he first met Grace, Ryan's grandmother, she specifically said to him, you better be not like James Blake. He gives bus drivers a bad name. And she apparently had a Spirit of Rosa t-shirt. And I'm like, if this was so important to Ryan's grandmother, he absolutely would have known who Rosa Parks was. Like, come on, show.
I know.
Smarter.
I thought the same thing. And I was a little bit like, I feel kind of gross saying this, but I was a little bit like, he acted surprised. Like, before they got off the TARDIS, they knew they were in, like, Montgomery, Alabama in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a kid that grew up with a very, like you were saying, with his grandmother. Like, it was the fact that he was surprised about it really bothered me. And I know they were trying to like have one character, but he shouldn't have been the character, right?
No.
Having him be angry about it and like, you know, confrontational about it makes sense, but not like, wait, what?
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
Come on.
You know? Yeah, it took him kind of so long.
Yeah.
And yet then he talks later in that scene or in another scene with Yaz about how he stopped by the police more and everything. And I'm like, yeah, a young black man is intimately acquainted at all moments with the environments that he's in. It would not have taken him this long to get kind of the, he would have stepped out of the TARDIS doors knowing to be wary.
Yeah. And also the doctor and Yaz would both probably be like, don't pick up that handkerchief.
Yeah.
You know, like someone would have stopped him. I just, mm-hmm. it felt so contrived in order to say a message. And it was just a little frustrating the way they did
it. It was. And then ultimately, before we leave that, I just, it seems to me it's part of the genre of narratives in which white people, ultimately it's a white person who by their actions allow people of color to find their inner greatness and do remarkable things. And so you have Rosa Parks and the story of the doctor, who I like, but the story of this white female doctor is inserted into that history. And without her intervention, Rosa Parks does not have the opportunity to be great. You know? I mean, it's very much of the kind of like, you know, the aliens built the pyramids. There's something so anomalous in our social imaginations about people of color doing remarkable things and white people are nowhere around. So in these alternate histories we construct for ourselves, white people got to be inserted in some kind of way. So I don't know. I'm liking the season so far. This episode, not into it.
Yeah. There's one line in the Turasanga, sorry for forgetting how to pronounce that conundrum, that I feel like is a part of that, the orbit of like, we're trying to acknowledge the doctor and who the historical position of the doctor in the past, where she's talking to the medical technician on the medical craft. And he's like telling her some stuff and she just says, you're right. And I was like, men don't say that they're wrong ever. Like, men don't ever concede that point. And it felt so pointed. Like, she said it twice.
Yeah.
It felt so pointed to me in a way that I was like, yes. Like, cool. Even the doctor who has been around for centuries can be wrong about things and can acknowledge it. And, like, that is part of the spirit of this new doctor that I really appreciate. And they were able to get past the issue in order to solve the problem, which is, you know, the part of what is great about it. It's right. The doctor finds themselves in these life or death situations and solves them by like building gadgets and like being smart.
Yes.
And I love it. I love it.
And I love that the doctor once again avows, like, I do not use guns. So that episode, the Ghost Monument, and they're like the robot snipers or whatever. And Ryan's like, why don't we just shoot them? There are these guns right here. And she's like, no, we don't use guns. And he goes out there and there's that very funny Call of Duty joke, you know, where he goes out and tries to mow down the robots. But yeah, this doctor who's like, there are principles, and if you betray your principles in moments of challenge, when things are hard, then they were never your principles in the first place. I love that that's a constant throughout the show.
Yeah, no, totally. Okay, really quickly, The Demons of Punjab is an episode. So the premise of the episode feels a little wobbly, timey-wimey, because Yaz finds out, like, Yaz wants to know more about her grandmother, and her grandmother won't tell her things. And so she convinces the doctor to go back to the time period in which her grandmother, you know, was, like, a young adult. And, like, no, you don't do that. Although, you know, there's lots of episodes where they fuck up the time continuum, but like that felt weird to me. But the episode was about the partition of India.
Whoa.
And creating divisions, like creating Pakistan and like forcing Muslims and Hindus to live separately in where they weren't previously, which had a lot to do with the British Empire coming in, blah, blah, blah. All this
do you know
shit,
who
right?
wrote, like, who wrote that episode?
I can't remember. I'm very curious about it. And I don't know enough about that history like I do with like the with like I do with Rosa Parks to know what they fucked up and what they didn't. So it was pretty like to me, I was like, oh, damn. But one of the things about it, so one, again, it's another example of like taking these historical moments about people of color and like illuminating them or like bringing them to, you know, it again, you were saying it's for kids. Like this is useful educational bits, at least to inspire interest. Like it made me want to go learn more about the time period in which this all happened. Anyways, one of the things that I loved in this, though, and this is the spoiler, is that when they get to the little village where her grandmother lives, they encounter demons. And it's immediately assumed that the demons are, and they're aliens, right, are evil. And the doctor's like, they are a race of assassins, and they come in and they go around the universe and they kill people. And so everyone's on edge. They're worried that, like, the grandmother is going to die. And so Yaz will never be born and all of that kind of timey-wimey shit. It turns out that that race of aliens realized that being assassins was bad and that their planet, while they were out assassinating, like their people, basically, like there was a massive genocide. Like they almost all died. And so instead of killing people, they go to sites of death that are forgotten or that are not witnessed so that they can preserve that in that time capsule of people. And I just like one, I love the flip with aliens, like with when you think something is evil, but they're really not. And I really love, you know, especially this feels so impactful in terms of the research you and I did for our book, History Versus Women, now available at fine bookstores everywhere. Where I just couldn't help think about all of the lives that are never recorded, right? All of the lives that aren't valuable enough to have remembered in any way. And so that kind of hit me in the feels. And I liked it. I thought it was good. I think, you know, the episode is a little, I enjoyed it. I also watched it at like 3 a.m. So
I'm excited to watch it. I'm excited to watch it.
Again, I don't know if it's like super fucked up, if there's like things in it that are, you know, the history is, you know, like there's one character in it that you're like, oh, God, why are you doing the things that you're doing? Like, this is kind of dumb, whatever. But oh, like the overarching theme of it, I really liked.
Yeah. I am liking this season, you know, and I am prepared to love it. I hope that we get, you know, at least I hope Jodie Whittaker gets at least 2 or 3 seasons as the doctor and really gets to like dig her toes in, because I think this show could just go amazing places. And there's the promise of that. We've had a couple of episode clunkers so far, but we've also had ones that like I really enjoyed. What do you think about the interior of the TARDIS?
Let's save that for the bonus.
Okay, good, because I have fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's, I'm excited about, what am I saying? I am curious to know what our listeners think. Who's watching it? What are you thinking? Please hit us up. Give us a freak out. We would love your freak outs on Doctor Who. So if you want to do that, it's at feministfrequency.com/FREQOUT. And maybe we'll do another episode like at the end of the season for the last half as well, because I love talking about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
All right. Now it's time for What's Your Freak Out?
I take it I'm going first.
You sure are, because I don't have one.
Your freak out should be you're not getting enough sleep, and that's dangerous.
All right, Ebony.
So my freak out is I discovered a new to me. To me, author. So don't nobody hit me up and be like, oh, yo, she's been writing forever, blah, blah, blah. I'm saying to me, right? I will get to who that author is in a second. I'm conflicted about the genre of steampunk, because while aesthetically, you know, the kind of trappings of the genre are very cool looking to me, in effect, many of the stories, not all, but many of the stories that I have seen come out via or, you know, from the genre of steampunk are like loosely veiled imperialist fantasies. And I'm not with it, you know? So when you talk about like a Victorian England, and so much of steampunk is heavily Anglophilic, right? So it's usually set in England, or it's environs, or it's got, you know, English heroes and heroines, whatever. But you're talking about, you know, like a Victorian England who through, you know, like shiny bronze and leather tool work and cool goggles and, you know, whatever, is, you know, still like taking over the globe, being a colonialist power. And there's supposed to be something like very hipsterish cool about the way that it's done in this steampunk style. But I'm like, nah, I'm still not with it. Like, this is just a new way of telling old stories about horrible people. Man, I've been saying a lot of controversial stuff.
Wait, did you say who the author is?
No, because I haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, sorry.
Point is, this is why I have not read a lot of stuff in the steampunk genre, you know. And I could be completely wrong. I'm just talking about the stuff that I've encountered, right? In fact, please hit me up. Let me know about all the great stuff I'm not reading. But there, don't fuck with me. There absolutely is that undercurrent of like imperialist fantasy with a lot of this stuff, right? So anyways, I'm reading a book that I don't think would be considered steampunk necessarily, but it's nevertheless set in this sort of alternate history. It's set during the Napoleonic Wars between England and France. And as I say this, people are going to figure out who I'm talking about. And there are dragons there. So I just finished reading the first two books in the Temeraire series by Naomi Novik, and I'm loving them. I am loving them. I think these are just rip-roaring yarns, as an old white man would say. Like, they are just fun stories, and they're incredibly well-written. And I love the relationships and the characters in them. But, and I always have a big old but, I am very conscious of being a Black person reading these kinds of books, because I'm reading it and I'm like, there is absolutely no space for someone like me in this universe. So much of the joy I take as a reader, and I know other people take as a reader with these fantastic fictions, is that you can imagine yourself in the universe presented, right? So you may or may not see yourself as, you know, Luke Skywalker, but you can see yourself in a galaxy long, long ago and far, far away, right? You could be somewhere there. But in the universe presented here, there are some elements of our actual real history that get transplanted into this alternate history that would make my time there untenable. And I'm speaking specifically about slavery. So I only read the first two books. So, you know, say that. Takes place early 19th century, like around like 1805, 1806. And the main character's father is heavily involved in the abolition movement in the UK, staunchly anti-slavery. And there's this, you know, heartbreaking scene of slaves around the coast of Africa as this ship travels around there. But I was like, this history can envision a world in which dragons exist, all kinds of fantastic creatures exist, in which human history has grown up, you know, has blossomed through this proximity to dragons. And yet, slavery still exists, you know? There's a way, and this is something we talk about in video games too, right? You know, you have folks coming out their neck talking about how, oh, it would be inappropriate to see a person of color in like medieval settings, which A, that's incorrect. That's factually wrong. But how is it that you can imagine unicorns and mages and wizards, but you can't imagine free Black people, free Africans, you know? And so at the end of the second book, we have this dragon, Temeraire, who's just an amazing character, who's determined to go back to the U.S. after being in China and seeing how dragons are treated in China, determined to go back and essentially free his, you know, brother and sister dragons from the way they've been pressed into service for the U.K. war effort. And this is great. But I'm like, so you can imagine a world in which dragons are given their freedom and should be given their freedom, but the backdrop of slavery is nevertheless moved. What would it be like for me to have the opportunity to read a book like this and to never have to confront that, to know that the bondage of my ancestors is not taken as such a given, such an immutable fact of history, that it has to get replicated over and over and over again. It was just interesting. Like I said, I have loved the books. I'm definitely going to read the rest. Can't wait to get back into the story of Temuera. But yeah, it was just, once again, that moment where as a Black person, I was like, if I were in this story, I couldn't be in this story because there's no space for me here. There's no space for brown women here. And the space that is created for them is these faceless characters who experience trauma and horror, you know, in bondage. And that's it. They are not allowed to be aviators riding dragons. They are not allowed to be, you know, heroes and heroines. They are simply part of the teeming mass of brown people. That's it. It was very sad.
That is very sad. And frustrating.
Yeah. And yet I love the books. Like, and so that's why, you know, people from marginalized backgrounds, like, we always have, you know, that double consciousness, right? Like, you're always conscious of the way that you move in the world and how the way you move in the world is different from the way that white folks or men get to move in the world. They get to own everything.
Yeah, they do. It's annoying. Let's change that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the reason I don't have a freak out is because I've only been watching things that we're going to talk about on future for me, past for you episodes. And then also I've been rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine because that show's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk about my Instapot.
Oh boy.
I literally couldn't think of anything else. So I'll make this quick. I love the Instapot. I'm not getting paid to say this, although maybe we should be.
Oh, yeah. We should be getting some SponCon.
Right? Well, no, because everybody just loves it, so they don't even have to fucking advertise. But I love it. Yesterday I made a pot of lentils in like 30 minutes and no pre-soaking, no nothing. And I made a couple of jars of chicken broth because you can do everything in it. And then I soft-boiled some eggs. And it's always the most perfect. Like, when you get the timing down, it's the most perfect soft-boiled egg ever. It's a magic machine.
The worst freak out ever.
I mean, I am freaking out about my Instapot. It's just not, you know,
boy.
Topically.
Without Carolyn here, things are just not good.
Well, I'm also not done my book that I'm reading, so I'm only halfway through it. I really had literally nothing to talk about. On that note, let's end the show.
Yes.
You can catch us back here every single Wednesday. Stay tuned for the bonus episode, which is only available as a backer of this podcast, which you can very easily be if you just head over to d.rip/femfreak. If you are enjoying the show, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And while you're hanging out on the TARDIS waiting for the next adventure to kick in, just let your friends know that there's this great podcast you should be listening to. You can check out all of our work and our other podcasts at feministfrequency.com, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at FemFreak to stay up to date on all of the news. You can also find us at that horrible thing on the internet, Twitter. I am at Anita Sarkeesian. Our co-host, Carolyn Pettit, is at Carolyn Michelle. And Ebony?
I am at Miss Rosa Parks.
Oof. I wonder who has that.
It better be someone good.
Our producer is Phil Circus, who also composed our theme music, technical support by Sarah Norales, and art by Jamie Varon. We'll see you next week.
Bye.